Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and also welcome back to season two in an episode I believe is going to be our first one back with a really brilliant guest. I'm delighted to get to chat to in person now that things are they back to normal? They're somewhat back to normal. And our guest this week is one of the best Scottish comedians of our generation, whose charming style of joke telling has been featured on Live at the Apollo, Mock the Week and Roast Battle, often found talking about relationships, family and stereotypes. Please welcome to your ears the brilliant Larry Dean.
Hello. I never know what to do at the beginning of a podcast when people would like, it's, if somebody says something really nice about you, it's the most uncomfortable feeling ever. You're just like, oh, compliments getting built up. But yeah, thank you very much for having me and let's keep expectation low.
It's interesting.
I can't handle compliments, it's too difficult. But yeah, thank you very much.
You just immediately want to counter all the achievements totally. That are actually yours.
Exactly. I want to just let you know that was all wrong and there was just a...
You were having good days.
Yeah, just having good lucky days. Yeah, exactly. And I think most people are like that though. I think when you get a compliment, it's so difficult to kind of... Well, especially if you've got low self-esteem. I got given out to by one of my exes, actually, because people were complimenting me after a gig. Mm-hmm. And I would just be like, yeah, I was just lucky, whatever that. And he was like, you know that you make people feel stupid by batting the compliment back at them? You just have to go, thank you very much, and then shake their hand, and then you can deal with the uncomfortableness yourself. You can't share that lack of comfort with them. So, yeah, thank you very much. Got that too. And this is probably the longest beginning of a podcast you've had. Well, I complimented the guest and I threw him. But yeah, thank you.
You know what? It's pretty common.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it with comedians that more than like non-comedians?
You were going to say normal people.
Yeah,
you?
I was going to say mortals. Is it? Is it more comedians that find it difficult?
Definitely. So I thought, because I mentioned that I have a mental health podcast as well, I didn't think there would be a level of nervousness with the comedians more so than the guests on that one.
Really? Oh, my. It's weird. I'm not like... I prefer when the podcasts are like, when I chatty and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's when usually... You didn't notice maybe before, but when you were telling me of like, this is how the podcast works, I was getting nervous then because I was thinking, oh, no, I'm going to start thinking. And I'm like, no, I don't want my brain to start thinking because if I start thinking, then we're all screwed. So conversation-wise, I'm like, it's fine. And also knowing that there's an editing button there. Yes. If I say something stupid, I can get off the hook. So it's less tense than a normal gig.
Yeah, good.
Yes.
That's what we're going
for. We will
for.
Be okay. And there's a cat here to make sure I feel calm.
Yes, she obviously likes your voice because she's decided she needs to watch you for this interview.
Cute. So cute.
So to start us off with, do you have a relationship story to share?
Well, I actually have quite a lot of relationship stories, but the one that springs to mind, and I think it epitomises how intense I am on dates. Mm-hmm. And I only actually really realise this about myself since lockdown, because when I met my current partner, he was like, you know how intense you are? And like, on a date, you just like, he says, you come across like you're love bombing, but I'm not love bombing. Like, I'm actually just... like, oh my God, you're really nice. And I just throw everything at them. I'm not really shy in a date. So for instance, I met someone a few years ago after a gig and really nice, really handsome and got on the house on fire. And I thought, oh no, he might think this is just a one night thing. And I stayed over at his. We didn't do anything like sexual or whatever like that. I just stayed in the same bed because I think I didn't want to get a night bus because I was scare easy. And I woke up at like 4 or 5 in the morning and was still a bit pissed. And I thought, you know what? I'll show him that I'm really nice, that I'm not just, you know, I'm a boyfriend material. So I went into the kitchen, went to the washing machine, and I took out the washing that had just been cleaned and I hung it all up for him. And I woke up the next morning and him not really knowing why I did that and me thinking, oh, I was being dead sweet there by doing his laundry. But if you've only known someone a night and they're doing your laundry for you, I kind of like, yeah, no wonder he never texts me back after that. Do you think that's weird?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry to say. Well, I also come across pretty intense on a date, and right. being a podcaster does not make it better, because now I'm even more practiced interrogating people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is my inclination, because obviously there's some level of interest and attraction that got me there, and now I want to really get to know them really quickly. And that is not appropriate. They've also got to get to know you as well.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a chat and build up a rapport. It's not just, okay, I have questions. How quickly can we ask about your family? You know, that's where I have to taper down my intensity. And even still, as a very intense person.
Is that an intense question to ask people about, like, their family stuff? Because usually, I mean, gay people come out, like, tell each other their coming out story on a first date. That's so common.
Okay, maybe that's cultural difference then.
Maybe, because I know that, because I asked my followers, because I did this, like, podcast pilot thing about, like, your worst dating stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed from my followers, the gay people would message me and with, like, the most horrendous stories that would you could ever read, right? And they were so funny. And then straight people message in and be like, oh, I was on a date, and they wouldn't stop talking about themselves. And I'm like, that's not that bad. Like, I'm literally hearing about how somebody was trapped in a room with, like, leather on the walls and stuff like that, or like they had a heart attack on a date, or like there are someone's even somebody messaged me saying about how they were having sex with someone, then their cousin walked in, right? And I'm like, and then people go, yeah, but you know, they talk too much. I'm like, nah, it's not. No, I think straight and gay dating is so, in general, it's so fucking, like, different, because also I think gay people have so much shame from having to keep it a secret for so long. They don't get practice, because our culture is the kind of thing of, you get a girlfriend when you're a kid, or and then you get to, like, go to the disco together, the school discos and all that kind of stuff. And imagine having to start that all over again after telling your family and friends that you're gay, and obviously what comes with it with that. So I only started actually learning what to actually date was like when I was 23. So it's weird of having to experience what usually you experience as a kid when you're 23. And I think that really fucks with people's head. I think that's probably why gay dating is a lot more difficult. It's about, like, we're all still practicing. Is that a good point?
No, I think that's very true. Yeah, get some points for that. Why not?
Thank you. Oh, cool. Oh, you mentioned the points and I'm like, okay, cool, thank you. This is my problem as well. This is my lack of self-esteem going, hold on, did I make a good point there? Was that wrong? Should we edit that out?
No, it was definitely a good point. And I think you're right, because that's in many ways where I think it can take gay people longer to get to their healthy relationships and filter out a lot of the people that they shouldn't be dating, a lot of behaviours that are inappropriate and stuff, because you've got the balance of there's still a lot that you may have been brought up with as a young person, where you're like, okay, I want to have a relationship when I'm an adult, and I want it to be like this and live together and all these kind of things we imagine.
Mm.
But then we are encouraged to imagine it with somebody of the opposite gender.
Yeah.
And so then you've got that whole unpicking process of, okay, what bits of it do I keep? What bits of it now do I not keep?
Yeah, yeah. It's a head fuck. Because even the thing of, with a lot of that stuff, like, my partner's really into, like, narcissism. Like, he was supposed to do a TED talk on it. Like, not as in, like, he practices
to study it, right.
Yeah, yeah. But it's because he's a lawyer, so it obviously comes in handy in his work. But he was supposed to do a TED talk on it, but it was cancelled because of COVID. But, so I've learned a lot about that stuff. And you notice that so many people's defence mechanism is narcissism. But they don't realise they're doing it. They've all got, like, narcissistic tendencies or, like, traits and stuff like that. And then when you start looking into it, you're like, oh, fucking hell. Like, you can legitimise any behaviour, to be honest, because you can go through and be like, well, the only reason why I do that is that, or the only reason why I do that is that. But then you kind of go, well, what's the point of looking at the reason why I do it rather than actually just cut out the behaviour at all? Because there's loads of things that I didn't even realise about myself. I was like, wow, that's fucking toxic. I should never have done that. But the horrible thing about dating is you only realise your shit tendencies after they have, like, affected other people. Because even that thing because I remember when I started dating and my pals were like, oh, you got to do that treat him mean, keep him keen thing. I hated that so much. But I thought, well, I won't text back yet, because if I text back now, I'm going to seem too keen. And it's like, well, hold on, I've actually been on the other end of that. And it's horrible because you're thinking, well, hold on, do they like me? It's kind of leaving a bit of a... caused me to feel anxious. And it's like, well, am I having to do it to somebody else? You know, because that will make them kind of be a bit anxious and wonder if I like them or not. So it's habits like that. I'm like, God, that's so fucked up. And to normalise that shit. Because people, it is normal now. It's so... I'm really, like, regretful. The annoying thing is, I want to kind of be like... sorry to anyone I've ever done that to, because it's so, what's it called? Because I hate it myself, and it was just because I thought, well, that's just what you got to do. My second date with my partner, he told me off, like proper told me off in public, because he was just like, why do you not text me today? And I was like, oh, because I didn't want to seem too keen. And he went, what's the fucking point of like seeing someone if you're not trying to seem keen? Of course you're keen. I know you're keen because you've asked me to go on a second date with you. I'm keen, which is why I'm texting you. Can you stop these fucking stupid games? And I'm just standing there like a wee kid getting told off by a headmistress. And I was like, oh, actually, yeah, that is a good point. You may as well just be yourself. And if someone doesn't, if someone's like, well, that's too intense, fuck them.
Yeah, no, I think that's difficult, right? Because it's a balance, because equally you can't be texting them constantly. And
then that's controlling.
Yeah, my flatmate actually has a great thing for this where she says you've got to try and match their energy.
Yeah.
And I think it saves people in so many situations if you do that, particularly with things like app dating. You know, sometimes we can be inclined to like make way more effort to someone that doesn't message much because we're trying to like win them over and get them interested. And actually, we're probably just wasting our time. Or, you know, you go the other way and like, oh, well, they didn't text me back. Now I'm not going to text them back. And so you're trying to, you know, treat them mean. Then you're both doing it. And then before you know it, you actually don't even like each other.
Yeah, it's and then but when you do that as well, it's like, do you have the thing of like, I had it so many times, you go, oh, I like you, and then they like you back, and you're like, oh, you like me? Ugh, I'm me, and I don't like me. What the hell's wrong with you? And that'd be like an off-putting thing. It's trying not to think of it as an achievement of like, I watched some psychology thing on TikTok. It was like about the reason why that works on people is because it's the same reason why a slot machine works, is not knowing what the payoff is going to be. Mm-hmm. So the reason why if you put a lot into like dating someone and then they don't give it back to you, the reason why that hurts a lot is because you feel cheated, because you're like, I put all this work in. It's not even the fact that they were great. You just think, I put all this work in. I got nothing out of it. I didn't get love out of it. Or the other thing is you think, well, I like this person because I put all this effort in and I never know what I'm going to get. Some days they'll be horrible to me. Some days they'll ignore me. But other days they'll be so nice to me. And it's just kind of like, fingers crossed. I've been in plenty of those dating scenarios. Like, fingers crossed which one of them I'm going to get this time. I'm so glad I don't have to do it. God, this is bringing back all this horrible trauma.
It's true, though, because I've definitely been in that situation a lot where you've put too much time into somebody. And I guess that's the like not matching somebody's energy thing, because when I think about it, it's not people that we both seemed equally keen. Mm. It was someone that I was really trying to win over. And in spending all that time and applying all that angst, you then pedestalize them even more. You already thought they were great, but now you've invested all this time, so they're even more of, you know, a prize in a way. And that's actually quite an icky way to think about somebody.
Oh, 100%. But I think it's the most natural thing to think. Because even the... I noticed as well, though, some people can... So if you're really nice to someone, a lot of people will think, oh, you're just trying to get something from me. And it's taken my partner about a year and a half, a year, to get his head around the fact that I'm like, I'm not trying to get something from you because we're already going out. Because being intense makes people kind of suspicious of you. Like, whenever I go away to like a... So I'm in Birmingham right now. I'm away for 2 days. I was in London last week. I was in Bristol the week before. I've been all over the joint. But whenever I'm away from home, I always get him like a gift. Just like a wee thing, just kind of let him know that I missed him. But he loves it. But then he's like, are you just doing that because, you know...
You feel guilty or
something. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I'm like, no, I'm doing it because I was thinking about you. Like, it's different. Like, I much prefer a gift from someone that's really, like, thought of something. So it'll be like a wee thing that he's mentioned to me, like, when he first met me. I'll be like, oh, there's a story, the reason why I got it. Or I saw this and I thought of you. Rather than, you know, when you see somebody with a partner and then the partner's like, oh, I bought them a car, or I bought them like a flashy watch. Actually, you know what? I'm fucking lying. I'd much prefer the car or the watch. God, who am I kidding? No. Fuck, sorry, mate.
I know what you mean, and I wanted to ask you more about the insecurity and not tr it sounds like you don't trust people when they like you. Is that different in this relationship?
Well, I had this thing of with a bunch of my exes, I had a thing of, I went from, I'm not going to name any names, obviously. So I went from one relationship that was very toxic, and some of that was my side, some of that was their side. And it was just a complete, what do you call it? It caused a lot of paranoia and of a betrayal. And so my paranoia, I didn't get rid of it. And I remember my therapist saying to me, it's like, well, in order to trust someone again, rebuilding trust isn't just you going, I'll drop it. It has to be both ways that it happens. That never happened. And that relationship ended. Then I went into another relationship with someone I can only describe as a narc, right? And because I remember my pal saying to me, he said, do you remember when you said to me about how you were on a 5-2 diet of affection? So 5 days a week, they weren't nice to you. And then 2 days a week, they were nice to you. And that made you think, well, why were they nice to me on Friday and they're horrible to me today? I don't understand. But then learning more about narcissism, I've been like, oh, that was that. That was it called? Discard, because I'd annoy them one day.
Yeah, well, it's purposely putting you on rocky ground. So then you get paranoid about your own behavior and you have to invest more of yourself in them
And
because
you
they're the
question
one
yourself.
that can tell you how you feel because they've so taken it away from you.
Exactly, and I handed all my self-esteem over to them, and it meant that anything that was a devaluing comment or an insult felt like so much more, because it almost felt like, well, I've given you all my self-worth, and now that's
And
been
you've
thrown
decided I'm
back at me.
shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that ended, thank God. And then I think as well, the one thing I even realised was that I've got a lot of love for my exes. I don't talk to any of them anymore. I've got a lot of love for them though, but then there's that one, I'm like, no, because that was so superficial. There was nothing there that was actually that was really just a, what do you call it, a rebound kind of thing. I think I was weak, and then that's what narcs pick up on. They go, you're weak, I'll jump on that. And then next one was like a long dating thing, but they were seeing someone else at the same time. And my first partner was like, I was dating them, and then they were like shagging everybody around, but this was before we were committed, and that just caused me a lot of paranoia, because that was my first ever dating experience, and I was like, oh, I thought it was like Disney films. I didn't realize that we did the dating other people thing or having sex with other people at the same.
And did you think at the time you could bring that up and be like, actually, I think I'd
No,
like us a bit
so
closer?
so bad at being assertive. So I think all those things have amalgamated, is that when the thing joins together? Amalgamated, and they made me very distrustful, and you can come across as quite controlling. And there's things that I was in my relationship with Nick, he was like, that makes me feel controlled because you're constantly texting me. But it was because I was paranoid, and I was like, I need to text him. I wasn't saying you can't do this, but I was trying to, what do you call it? Trying to,
Sort of constantly be there, it sounds like.
yeah. And it wasn't a conscious thing. And then when he says that makes me feel controlled, I'm like, whoa, hold on a sec. How is that making you feel controlled? I didn't tell you couldn't do
But
anything.
it sounds like he maybe picked up on perhaps the intention behind it, that you come across as a really caring, loving person, and you really want to give that to people. But also there's an element of caring as a way that hopefully they'll stay.
Yeah, it's complete abandonment issues. What I've found with being mistrustful is because my therapist said to me, he said, you are so terrified of being insecure. And you will try and do anything you possibly can to not feel insecure. So I had all these coping mechanisms of, I feel insecure, therefore I will do this. And he says, you have to just start letting yourself feel that feeling. He said, even in our therapy sessions, most times when people are telling me about trauma or being abandoned or anything like that, they start crying. You have told about 20 jokes in an hour, right? And I was like, okay. I said, I can do it. I'll do it. The next session, I will not tell a joke. And he says, do you really think you can go a whole session without telling a joke? And I was like, find out in the next episode of Larry Dean's Breakdown. Yeah, I've started getting better at it. And it's fucking awful. It's so annoying feeling it. Because I even started saying to Nick, I have to do the thing of go, I feel insecure. And not do a stupid voice, not do a joke afterwards. So yeah, my mistrust has been through being terrified of being feeling insecure. And when I first start talking to people or start dating them, I idealise so heavily. I even looked up on YouTube, by the way, there's like a TED Talk. Is it a TED Talk? It's some other talk. Some other talk. What did you call them? A talk. But there's some guy that talks about how in a relationship, you actually don't look for someone you love. Instinctively, you will look for the pain you already know, because yeah. The negatives outweigh the positives on you going, well, I know what it's like to be treated that way, so I know how to handle that because I've already got these coping mechanisms on a subconscious level. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I've done in every single relationship. And it's not their bad, we've all got faults. They've done it to me as well.
Yeah, well, that's it, because that's how we end up in these patterns. Yeah. Because you see someone and you're like, okay, well, there are red flags, but they're red flags I know.
Yeah.
And so you kind of romanticise around them, and then you think, I'll deal with that, I've done it before. Even though actually, did it work out before? Would you not still be with that ex if it was so good?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, the amount of red flags that I've seen in it, there's enough to make a communist rally. It's so many. And I've given off so many as well. It's kind of been good of the past year.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, of the contrast of this fear of being left at a time when you're trapped in the house with someone.
Oh, yeah, but there's been plenty of times that, like, and I think everybody had it during lockdown, of arguments, and you thought, oh, are we going to stay together? Because the reason why The Shining is scary is because it's realistic. Because you think, yep, that could happen. I could go mad if I was stuck in a house in the middle of nowhere with my partner. And, yeah, I found that lockdown was difficult for that. Also because both of us hadn't been going out very long, or like everyone, your identity was stripped from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beginning of any toxic dynamic, is if both of you are trying to latch onto each other's identity, both of you are going to be unhappy. So looking back on it now, even myself and Nick chatted about it yesterday, of like how since lockdown restrictions are easing, I'm getting back to my life, he's getting back to his life, and we're like, oh my god, we're so much fucking happier. Both of us like just being independent and in a relationship, because before you couldn't be independent because you were basically sucking on the tit of whatever Boris Johnson said to do. So it's good. Learned a lot, and I learned a lot about myself as well. I know all of it good, but it's definitely made me have a bit more perspective of this is what makes me me.
Yeah, well, I'd mentioned to you, I'd spoken to Christopher MacArthur Boyd recently, and he was saying something a little bit similar, where in lieu of having his career, which so much of his identity was based around, he was like, okay, now I'll be the perfect boyfriend. Yeah. And I think you already try to do that so much that I fear what it would be like if that was your sole occupation.
Yeah, and you can't do it. There's like literally, I mean, it's the most obvious thing to say, but there's no such thing as a perfect boyfriend. And it was even that I constantly have a thing of I want to fix things. I'm not good at empathy for that reason. Like, I empathise with people, but as soon as, like, Nick would or any of my partners would tell me a problem, I'd be like, well, let's fix it. It's like, even if I don't think it's a big problem, I'd be like, well, I want to fix it because that will be me helping you. And you won't feel, I don't want my favourite person to feel sad. I want to get rid of that problem, but you can't fix the problems. And sometimes people don't want you to fix the problems because that takes away their power. But I'm just kind of like, no, it's fine, I'll do it. So I was constantly trying to cheer Nick up whenever he felt down. And yeah, I was like, oh, sometimes you just have to let them feel down for a bit.
Yeah, and if ever there's space to feel down, it's while we've got all that time inside. You know, you got free time for it.
It comes across as selfish from my part though, because like, how that would come across is I've gone, it looks like I'm like, well, I'm bored of you being sad. I want to fix it so you're happy again. You know what I mean?
I do, but I disagree. I think it sounds more like you genuinely want to help. You really care about this person, and so therefore you want to help the most. But also perhaps as an element of him being sad makes you feel sad, and those feelings you're busy pushing down.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. Bang on the money there. That's why, I mean, I try so hard not to be invalidating, because I always say to him, because there's so many things that Nick or any of my boyfriends have ever told me, and I began to definitely get better at this after therapy of get better at validating people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have that thing of, tell me a problem. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God, that is not a fucking problem at all. Like, that's so, such a small, insignificant thing that you're upset at. But I have to go, well, hold on, in my head, there's loads of things that are problems to me that other people don't give a shit about. So I have to go, okay, well, in my opinion, that's not a problem. But what I see and what I think is, it's a problem to them and I can see they're hurting. So therefore, I have to remember, put myself in the position of a problem that's not big to someone else, but it is to me, and then do it that way. But then you have to start sneaking in things of like how to solve it and myself and that kind of thing.
That's it, you don't though.
Yeah. I think though, the thing I try and solve though is like, well, the only way I can solve it is by supporting. But then sometimes like...
what, or even just not trying to solve it. You know, sometimes you looking after him is enough of a solve, if that makes sense. Because I relate to this a lot because I am very similar.
Aye.
But it's something I've had to work on, you know, particularly the jobs I do and stuff. Like, could you imagine if I got to the end of like a mental podcast interview and I'm like, okay, so you've told me some issues, now we need to fix them before you leave. Like,
yeah.
How toxic would that be? And also it's assuming that you always have the solution. And
is this the, is you it know, what triangle, the drama triangle, where are you a rescuer as well?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You seem like genuinely surprised that I know this shit. the look of, oh yeah, you know about the drama triangle.
No, that's not it. You're being very articulate.
Oh, right. Oh, can you tell I've been living with a lawyer for a year? I'm literally getting used to talking about, like, oh yes, in this form of psychological behaviour, is the cause of this. The thing I found is, so I had this, because there's sometimes, obviously, that I will... be like, I used to be like that, and here's what I learned from that. But obviously you don't want to say that because you sound patronising as fuck. Or somebody that's upset, but you don't want to say, this is what you need to do, because you sound patronising and invalidating. But the thing I noticed was, so I'm obsessed with drinking water and getting enough sleep, because there's that whole thing of your gut is linked to your brain, and dehydration is just going to make everything worse. So I've said to during an argument, I've said to my partner, I've been like, I've been drinking water like mad because I'm thinking I need to bring my best self to the argument, because if I get grumpy or dehydrated during this, it's just going to be fucking pointless. You know what I mean? And
wait, sorry, one second. Are you drinking water generally, or are you also specifically drinking it to, what, pre-game for an argument?
No.
That's what it sounds like.
Oh, funnily enough, actually, yesterday I was in a fucking foul mood in the afternoon. And I had a reason to be pissed off because someone had been really, really rude to me in a shop. And I was like, that was out of order what they did. But I didn't go mad or anything. I did the typical British thing. I just kept it to myself and just stored that anger up and was just annoyed at the world. And I was like, I'm actually dehydrated, so this is going to be worse. So then I had 2 pints of water. And then I was like, you know what? That's not a big deal. Stuff is easier to brush off when you're not hungry or tired or thirsty. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing I've been saying to Nick, and it sounds so invalidating, but I'm having to kind of like caveat the fuck out of it, being like, there is a reason for you to be angry. Absolutely. That is totally legitimate. I'm not trying to invalidate your feelings. Would you like a glass of water though? Because you're like, right now you're in a ball of pissed off, and you need to go, well, I need to not make myself feel as bad as I do right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, absolutely.
Is that trying to fix on another level, though, isn't it?
Oh,
God. Guess that is unhealthy.
But I guess there's... in fact, you know what? Take it back. Yes, that is, but that's something that is also super supportive, and you're not taking the autonomy away from him, right? Because you're saying, okay, that's valid, we can talk that through, but also, here, have this. It's kind of like if you brought him a blanket when he's feeling sad. You're not saying, don't be sad. You're saying, I'm here to look after you while you're sad.
Aye, but then...
I think that's lovely. I want that.
Oh, thank you. You hear that, Nick? You hear that? I told you I was right.
But it sounds like with his level of intuition, though, he's picking up on the stuff behind the eyes. So you might come and bring in the blanket, but you're also quietly panicking or planning 10 other things to do. And that's the stuff to make you slow down on.
Oh, mate, I can't handle arguments, though. I'm so fucking shit at them, because I...
So what happens?
Well, so usually it's something I've done wrong. Let's remember that. And
that's a level of honesty. That's a good start.
Oh, yeah, totally. And, yeah, the thing I find of... I'm not going to... Yeah, because obviously I don't want to, like, give too... Because it's not for me to say Nick's business. So I can only say from my own perspective. But the thing I find a lot of the time when it is my bad, and also I'm very annoying to live with because I've got so much energy... He loves chilling out and watching TV. I'm not very good at watching TV. Like, it will take me... There's an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race that me and Nick have been watching, and I was away, and I was like, I'll catch up. It took me 4 days to watch it, because I'd just... 5 minutes in, I'd be like, oh, actually, no, I can do this. And then I'd do something else, get distracted, make about 40 phone calls, and then come back to it, and then just that went on for so long. So the fact that I'm always on a... full energy. Like Nick even says, he goes, who put 50 pence in you today? Because I'm so like that. So he gets frustrated at that. That's been a cause of a lot of arguments, because it's come across that I didn't care about his relaxation time. But I do, but I'm a bit like, I'm trying. I said to him, if you want me to fuck off, say the phrase, fuck off, and I will not be offended, because I know, I'm aware that I'm annoying, but I'm not aware enough to know when I'm being annoying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in the argument, so what would happen is he'd get annoyed and I'd be like, okay, the reason why I did it is this. And I know this, the reason for doing something's not the same as an excuse. And I know a lot of the times when you tell someone the reason why you did something, it sounds like an excuse. But I feel like I need to tell them the reason why I did it or the reason why. And that would, well, I could only imagine, comes across as... I'm being a dick. I'm just going, yeah, but I did it for this reason. Or I'd be like, or even when you go, well, hold on, you did this. How is that any different? That's a kind of toxic way of, what's it called? That's a toxic way of going, we're not talking about the problem.
Yeah.
But it's because in my head I've seen a hypocrisy, but there's hypocrisy fucking everywhere. And but then Nick had to point out to me the other day.
But when you do say that, so he brings something up and says, you're doing this and it's annoying me, or I can't relax because you're, I don't know, buzzing around the house.
Yeah.
Watching a TV programme in one hand, doing 100 chores in the other. When you explain the thought process, is there a sorry in there?
Yeah, I say, sorry I did that, and here's why. I used to go, here's why I did it, I'm sorry. And I've noticed doing it the other way around is better, because... if I would start saying why I did it, it would sound like I was trying to get out of it,
yeah,
of apologising, and doing it the other way around. He now knows, because I was like, can you, I said, when we weren't arguing, I was like, can you please just let me say why I did it? Because I don't want you to think I ever do something on purpose to fuck you off. So the reason why
have
I did it is
more
from
me. Have you asked him if he thinks that?
Sometimes, yeah, because sometimes I think he does sometimes think I actually... Because sometimes I think, sometimes I'm such a fucking, so annoying, and it seems that it's all about me, but it's because I'm kind of off in my own wee world a lot of the time. Because if something annoys me, and I had to say tonight, I was like, you have to do this thing of not, I said tonight before, if when somebody says, you've done this thing, or you do this thing that fucks me off, or you do this thing that's bad, I don't think that's not me as a person, that you've got that wrong. I always think, well, what did I do that made you think that? And I was like to Nick, I was like, you have to not do that. Because I've said things to Nick before. He's been like, that's not me as a person. You've got me completely wrong. And I'm like, but that makes me feel invalidated. Can you at least listen to how I got to that point in my head? For instance, he told me that he thought I didn't care about his job. And I was like, wow. I was like, that's so fucking wrong. How on earth did you think that? And he told me things I'd done, or things I'd like. And it was little things, like I'd... came into the room when he was working and I'd give him a hug. To him, it came across that I went, well, it doesn't matter if you're working, I get a hug. You know what I mean? Larry gets hugs. But he was like, that just seems as if you don't care about my job, because it means you're just coming in willy-nilly as if you don't care. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, when he told me a bunch of reasons why, I was like, yeah, fuck, actually, that does make sense of why that is in contrast to what I actually think. My actions aren't matching up with what I want. But sometimes in arguments, you say things and you don't explain them, you immediately just go, no, that's not right. And rather than talk about the problem, it just gets fucking way out of hand. But I just shut down. I completely shut down an argument. He'd get really annoyed and I'd just be like, here's why I did it. And I'd keep going on and keep going on. And after about 10 minutes, I just have no interest in the argument anymore. I don't go down the route of, I'm going to say something that's going to hurt you. I just go down the route of, oh, whatever, like anything to get this argument. So yeah, I can look completely lost. If someone's having an argument, they're obviously very upset. And if someone is disinterested, they're just going to get more upset.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm answering these really long, long, really long.
I'm really getting an insight into your mind today.
I know, but I don't think it's unreasonable. Like, because my therapist does a great thing. My therapist is so validating because he goes, yeah, but it is boring. Arguments are boring, but you have to kind of try and resolve them before you allow yourself to go, oh, thank God, it's not happening anymore. But in the middle of it, I just shut down into... And I think a lot of it was just some childhood stuff. And I was just... Because I got shouted a lot as a kid and I just developed this coping thing of shut off. Just completely shut it down. And so in an argument, if someone raises their voice, immediately I'm just like, okay, nothing. Like, the louder you go, the less words you're going to get from me. I'm just not going to bother saying anything. I just shut off. And that is so frustrating because I know the thing of a lot of people shout, not because they're angry, but because they're sad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but I'm like, nope, can't do it. And I've said to Nick, now we don't do it anymore. Like, I can't do the shouting thing because it's just it just puts me in a place of, you're going to get nothing from this argument because I'm going to shut down. I'm going to get nothing from this argument because you're shouting. So we've like agreed we're never shouting again.
It's interesting. Yeah, I think I used to do something similar that I've mostly, I think, unlearned, where I would try and balance out the other person. Right. So the more emotional they would get, the less emotional I would get.
Aye.
To somehow, I don't know, balance out the situation. And of course it doesn't work. It's the same thing. They're just like, do you not care about this?
Yeah, yeah.
Why am I angry and you're not angry? And I'm like, well, but then we'll both be angry.
Like, exactly. So then we're both going to be in the wrong.
Yeah.
I find it so pointless. And I have said to Nick before, it's like, we don't have to argue. We really don't. And there has to be a cut-off point. Because once it goes on to a certain point, we're just going to disagree. And also, like, even the thing of, I've had it before in relationships with people keeping score. I don't understand that thing of, you started the argument. I know what I did was annoying, but it doesn't... No matter what I do that's annoying should not cause an argument. The only thing that causes an argument is two people disagreeing on something. So nobody's at fault for that. Like, if I've done something... Say, right, hypothetical... Right, this is genuinely hypothetical. But say, like, Nick cheated, right? He wouldn't do that, right? Not in his character at all. But say he did, and I was really fucked off. No matter what that other person does, you have a responsibility to conduct yourself. There's reasons in a certain manner. Like, so there's reasons why you would obviously want to shout. There's reasons why you want to call them names or whatever like that. But there's no excuse for doing that because that just makes you a dick as well. So... Yeah, I've always known the thing of, like, I have the responsibility to conduct myself to the standards that I'm going to set myself and that I want to have done to myself as well. So, no shouting, no name calling, just chill the fuck out. Because I just find that once you start arguing, chaos, because it's just like, well, you're not actually going to gain anything from it. Discuss it.
Yeah, and also I think there is a healthy way to, like, have the argument. And for some people that is shouting... But you've still, like you say, got to have some kind of decorum because otherwise it becomes that you're arguing about everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. You're just pulling in whatever you've thought of from 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And there's no way you're going to resolve that. You have to stay specific, as clinical as it might feel. Be like, okay, let's sort this out first.
Exactly. And also, the only reason why you're arguing is because you both disagree. It's not like one person started it. If you both agree on something, how the fuck can you have an argument? So if you're just disagreeing on things, it's nobody's actual fault you're disagreeing.
I have had that though, where you're so far into it that one of you brings up something you agree on, and then that ends up being a disagreement.
Oh my God,
and you look at each other.
I'm glad you pointed out, because when I said that out loud, I was like, actually, you know what? I've managed that as well. I've always said this about Nick, right? Is I'm going out with a lawyer, And the thing that's difficult about arguing with a lawyer is they're allowed to use their feelings as evidence. How the fuck can you argue back to that? He's trained in arguing. He knows how to win an argument. And I'm like, I'm a comedian. I'm trained to do a fucking joke. And also, if you do jokes in arguments, oh my God, you will get the worst responses ever.
Yes.
But I'm like, I need to do a joke because I feel, this is the thing, I feel insecure. I need to joke. They're going to leave me. I need to tell a joke. So I was, whenever I, but then weirdly, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because I'm like, I feel insecure. I feel as if I'm about to be abandoned. Therefore, I'm going to do my coping mechanisms. I'm going to tell a joke. Me telling a joke is going to make them feel, not on purpose, but it's going to make them definitely feel very invalidated, which is going to make them more likely to leave and abandon me. And then you get a wee circle like that. So now what I've had to start doing is I've had to start in my head, think of the joke, enjoy it, and then just think, I'll write that down after. I'll tell an audience I actually said it.
This is fascinating. I kind of want to witness one of them now.
Oh, no, you don't. You really don't. Like, I think my therapist is even fucking bored to death of hearing about me and arguments because just it's honestly the thing of me shutting down is gets the worst response. And I'm actually, I was like, oh, yeah. When Nick pointed out to me, he's like, you realise you like actually literally shut off during an argument? And I was like, no. And then I asked like people about like people that have had arguments with me before, and they're like, yeah, it's horrible. It's like feels like the most, it feels, makes you feel invisible because you don't, and I'm not doing it for that reason, but it makes it so much worse. And so I'm trying to now be present in it without being defensive, which is difficult of like,
yeah, because yeah. That's a natural thing. If you allow yourself to feel the emotions, then it's like, okay, now I want to combat them more.
It's fucking horrible. I'd rather just put them in a box.
But you have given me an idea for my rule of the game, which I'm not sure if it is so much a rule, to be honest, as something I am annoyed by in arguments that you've reminded me of. And so people for not doing this, please. And that is when people bring up something they did for you as leverage in an argument.
Oh, fuck.
So they turn around to you and they're like, oh, but I've been really nice to you this week. I bought you a cake. And my response, and this is not a good response for it, it does not go down well, but I have been known to say, oh, and you brought me the cake just so you could use it against me.
Mm.
But that is what it feels like. How are we even using being nice to each other as leverage?
That's a narcissistic trait, though, to do that. That's so narcissistic. To only do something nice for someone.
And that's the thing, I don't think that is the thought process. The thought process is, I've been nice to you and you are being a dick today.
Yeah.
That's incompatible. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think they actually did it for that reason.
Oh, no, but it's like, but I couldn't say that even if I thought it, because you'll have a thought like that. And it doesn't, yeah, a lot of the time people don't do it on purpose. Narcissists don't do this stuff on purpose. Like, a lot of it is just shit. Like, narcissistic people have just picked up shitty habits. And rather than, before it leaves your mouth, go, is this toxic? Like, you know what I mean? Because that just makes it sound as if they're like, well, I did this for you, therefore you have to act a certain way.
You have to behave.
Yeah, and that's a fucking, that's horrible to make someone think of. Like, I don't give a fuck if it's my birthday or Christmas Day, if I don't feel in a good way that day, I don't have to, what's it called? I don't have to act in a good mood if I'm not in a good mood. And my responsibility is not to take out on other people. But if I want to be miserable that day because I feel miserable, why should I have to fucking do it just because you got me a fire engine?
Yeah, so there you go. There's my rule of the game. Not holding nice things we've done for each other against each other in arguments.
Yeah, fuck that shit. I can't fucking stand that shit.
Have you got one?
A rule? Oh, mate. Difficult thing with rules. There's so many ones I come up with in my head of like, this is a red flag that people even think is a red flag. Jokingly, and I actually think it is, but then I said it to Nick and he was like, I do that. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not funny anymore. But I had a rule of if people take their birthdays or, yeah, if they take birthdays too seriously, if they take their birthday too seriously, that's a red flag because that's them going, but this day's all about me. And I'm like, I don't think anybody has... Do you take birthdays seriously?
No, I hate them. Yeah. I prefer not to celebrate aging.
Can you think of someone that does do that? Because I always think when people do take it too seriously, I'm not talking about like having a nice dinner with your friends and family. I'm talking about the people that go...
I know what you mean. Yeah, there's a difference between it's my day and therefore I want a big meal with all my friends versus it's my day and therefore I need to be treated like a prince.
Yeah, I get to do what I want.
And I get to, yeah, use it against people.
Exactly, because if they're going to do that on their birthday when everyone's being nice to them, imagine what they're going to do on days which not everyone's being nice to them. And that was such a red flag I noticed from dating people of, like, they will talk about what they're doing on their birthday or whatever, or I've seen them around their birthday and I was like, Jesus. And then I was like, oh, a few months later I found out they're a fucking horrible bastard. Like, those people are like, oh, fuck, you went on a date with them, they're horrible, they're mean. Other one is people that make you enjoy Halloween as much as they do, because they make you dress up and make, like, sometimes people just don't like Halloween, and the ones that kind of go, no, you have to dress up, it's Halloween, clearly have some trauma going on. They're going to take it on you.
I love Halloween.
But would you, so if I'm going to, like, a Halloween party that you've invited me to, would you go, you have to?
No, I am what you are describing, yes. I am really into Halloween. I'm not as much as when I was younger, but there was pretty much a time when, so my birthday's in August, so my birthday would finish and then Halloween would start. Oh, and Halloween would sometimes go nearly up to Christmas.
God almighty.
But I can confirm your theory, because a lot of that was, like, Halloween in many ways, as a young kid figuring out his mental health, made sense to me. I'm like, this scary time of the year reflects how scared I feel the rest of the year. So actually, in many ways, putting a skeleton up on the wall, which I know is not real, feels a lot safer than the other things I'm worried about in my head that I can't just go and, like, poke and be like, ah, yeah, not real.
My God, that's a really deep way of, like, what's it called, looking at Halloween. That's, like, that's really made me go, oh, maybe I was being a bit harsh about the Halloween thing.
I don't mind. I'm aware I'm unhinged about how much I love Halloween, but I also see where a lot of that comes from. I've probably done that where I've been like, this is my thing. We're dressing up. We're doing it.
Yeah.
And then there's other things. New Year's, by contrast, hate New Year's. I hide on New Year's. I just stay in my flat. Luckily, I've got fireworks I can see here, so that's quite nice. But no, I just hide, because for me, the passage of time is scary, not exciting.
We are so similar on that. Well done.
I think we're similar on a lot of these things.
But that was the best way I've heard it summed up. That's why I'm saying well done. I'm not saying because you're like me, well done, because I'd be more likely to pray for you if you were like me.
Talking of narcissism.
But well done. And summing up, you've summed that up perfectly. That's the best way I've heard it summed up, because that passage of time thing makes you so... You know when you feel... It's like self-conscious of existence is the most... It's so fucking... Yeah. Why celebrate it? It's so bizarre. Why are we celebrating time and space and all that? Can we just ignore that takes place? Because I get freaked out about it.
Yeah, I've not finished a few things this year. I don't want to think about them more. And that's what it is. So that's my, like, darkest period of the year.
Yeah.
And then I just... But I have to allow myself to be in it. I have to be like, okay, I'm going to buy loads of snacks. I'm going to camp out here. I'm not leaving the flat. And in a few days, I emerge from it. And I'm like, okay, the new year isn't as bad as I thought it might be.
That's great, though.
And so that's become my weird process. And my counsellor is like, do you think we might be ready to move on past that? And I'm like, no, we are keeping that one. Just, I still need it.
You found a good way of dealing with it, though. Because I think that thing of, like, just shutting off for, like, a few days and, what do you call it, eating loads of snacks.
It's like my version of a holiday. Yeah. It's just way more depressing.
Yeah, but, well, maybe get better snacks.
Well, on that strange note, we should wrap up.
I'm trying to think if there's any other, what's it called, rules that I'd have?
We've got, no, we're all good.
Oh, okay,
but we do have a little...
Trying to nudge my partner to keep the flat clean.
We do have a little Patreon bit. This is what it is for you, is that you're going to play this to him later and be like, see, you didn't listen to me explain myself. Here is a tape.
And honestly, you can actually keep this in the recording. I get so worried about saying stuff about Nick that he would not want people to hear, because he's very private compared to me. I can tell you anything you want. I'm not private at all, but he's very private on certain things.
We're just used to sharing everything.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
But I know I can't push my standards on other people.
Well, we're going to wrap up there on that note. But thank you so much for joining me. We're going to record an extra 10 minutes for the subscribers in a minute. So
oh, cool.
We'll come back to something you said there. But yeah, thank you. Is there anything you want to plug upcoming tour next year?
I've got a tour next year. If you just go on my website, larrydeancomedy.com, or just follow us on social media, I'll be posting stuff about the tour there. And yes, I'm not that deep a talker on stage. I'm more of a face puller. So
yes, there's like dinosaur impressions and all sorts.
It's not as not me going, actually, I think you'll find this about narcissism. It's a lot more stupid. But yeah, you caught me on a day. I'm like, no, I'm going to reflect.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.